according to a Pew Research Center report, more than half of the Americans polled believe that violent crime has been on the rise over the last decade. But according to crime data, violent crimes have actually declined by nearly 20%. Our next guest believes the way journalists cover crime could be contributing to that public perception. Akintunde Ahmad is a Columbia Journalism Review Delacorte Fellow. He wrote the piece, Why Journalists Need to Think Twice About Reporting on Arrests. Tunde, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be able to speak.
In your piece, you outlined a couple of consequences of the way we cover crime in this country. I want to start with that perception issue we just mentioned. Crime is going down. Our perception is that crime is going up. What is it about the way we cover crime that might be feeding into that as you see it?
Well, I think part of it is that in my reporting process, I talk to a vast array of different breaking news reporters in different cities, and a lot of them stated that their editors told them more or less, if it bleeds, it leads. Or in New York specifically, they say that in order for something to get into the paper, it has to be murder and mayhem. And that's what's guaranteed to be on the breaking news segment. And I think historically, this has just been the way news has functioned. But it really does not have to be that way. I think that we are kind of selling ourselves short and not really thinking about all of the vast arrays of topics that the public finds interesting. And because it's been this way for so long, doesn't necessarily mean that it has to stay that way. And I really do think it's time to make some changes.
There is an argument that, okay, if I live in a community and there's a crime in my community, I want to know about it. Is there a case to be made that journalists are just providing what their audience wants? Or is it more than that?
I think it's a little bit more than that. I think definitely there are some times where if it provides a public threat, then you should definitely inform folks in the area and at large about the perceived or potential danger that they may face due to a crime. But a lot of times it may not be that grave or serious. If we're saying that there was just a bar fight one night from folks who were intoxicated and we list all of their names, they may not be posing a threat to the folks in that area. It was just a one-off incident. However, that stigmatism attached to them committing that crime actually affects their life and future possibilities much more than the good it would do to the public to know that they did that. But in the case of, let's say, someone did discharge with a murder and, you know, the public is searching for them or they're on camera doing a crime and they haven't been convicted of it, but they are charged or a warrant is out for their arrest, I think in those cases, it does make sense to still report it. So, I mean, there's a little bit of gray area there, but I think for the most part, for petty crimes, for petty theft, for, you know, just one-off fights or things like that, it's not necessarily imperative that these outlets do report this and make sure that it's a leading story or always on the breaking news.
You mentioned another, what you see as a negative consequence there. And in your piece, you talk about a documentary on two, I think there were brothers who were accused of a crime. Later, their accuser had recanted. They were exonerated for the crime. But those initial stories were still out there. Can you talk about how that can hang with somebody for their whole lives?
Right. So this documentary out of Omaha followed these two brothers actually over 8 years of their lives. And one of the major turning points in the story was after they had been exonerated of all charges, they realized that in doing a Google search and in their search for employment, they were like just checking their records. And they kept seeing that these articles were still there about this crime that literally on the record, the victim recanted or the alleged victim recanted and said that she had falsified her report. So there was literally no basis for this to still be out there. And they actually had to call all of these outlets to ask them to take the article down. And some of them did, but some of them didn't. So till this day, if listeners want, they can search Darcell Trotter and they will still find the original piece that was published about him and his brother being charged with his assault that literally never happened and is on record showing that it never happened because the victim recanted. And I mean, it's a common problem and it happens to a lot of folks. And in other countries, you know, they have the right to be forgotten. Like the European Union, you can actually, there's a formal process that you can go through to request that this information be taken down about you. But in the US, it's not the case. So it's really up to the discretion of the editors. And, you know, we're seeing shrinking sizes of newsrooms and massive layoffs. So they have less and less resources to actually devote to actually going back retroactively and making amends to these pieces. So we're trying to figure out a way where we can, at least moving forward and potentially retroactively, also remove or at least put in a system where people can request to have this information removed.
Talking to Akintunde Ahmad with the Columbia Journalism Review. He wrote a piece there called Why Journalists Need to Think Twice About Reporting on Arrests. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When you're reading or watching news, if it bleeds, should it lead? Do you want to see a lot of crime reporting in your community? Do you think the media overcovers crime at the local, state, or national level? Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Tunde, you also write about not just the quantity, but the quality of crime coverage. There's kind of the standard police blotter or crime blotter, where it's so-and-so was charged with this crime at this address type of reporting. And there's not really much reporting there.
Yes, definitely. I think a lot of times you get wind of this breaking news either through your local police dispatch, and a lot of folks are stationed at police departments for waiting for this breaking news. And you get to the scene, and oftentimes you have to turn out that piece so quick because this news cycle is recycling so quickly, you know, every 24 hours, but really every hour you want to be the first person, the first news outlet to get this out. So you go with the only available information you have, which is usually from a police officer who was the first responder there, and they may not actually know exactly all the details. They're going on maybe some witness accounts, what a victim of a crime is saying in that moment. But in order to, you know, properly report these things and talk to witnesses and maybe chase down witnesses and get connected with them, you may need more time than that. But a lot of times your news outlet is asking for the information immediately, and you have to turn in something quickly. And if all you can go with is just the name and what they're charged with, oftentimes we're missing out on the nuance, on the details that may actually be of a greater service to the public to let them know what actually occurred and avoid some misconceptions and loss of detail in transit.
You give a kind of a worst case example, and I think most reporting doesn't end up like this, but you give an example of some New York tabloid style crime reporting where after that initial police blotter, they kind of have this gruesome, lurid description and blame it on an initial suspect. And then later it turns out they didn't do it at all.
Right. And I mean, this is something that I think can be prevented if reporters are given more time up front to actually do the job of a reporter, which is to track down your sources, to talk to witnesses, to talk to family members, maybe to get a motive on the crime and piece together a story that is cohesive and makes sense with as many sources as possible that are relevant to that particular story, as opposed to potentially endangering someone's future because, right, that stigmatism sticks with you forever because it's not just, oh, they were falsely reported and this article is up, but now if they go to get employment, this is going to stick with them forever. And I think another portion of this that I mentioned when I got to the part about manning the box, which is something in Wisconsin, to my understanding, mm-hmm. you have implemented man the box laws. So, I mean, the whole portion of it is to get rid of the prejudice and stereotype and negative attitude attached to folks who are convicted of crimes and have served their time and have been released. But if you do ban the box, but for most crimes that people end up incarcerated for, there is a media story to go along with it. And there is no way for folks to actually request to these news outlets to remove this information. Then it's kind of undercut. You know, we have legislators who are going to battle for these policies, but I'm like, that's only part of the battle because it's all about the perception. And there is no law, of course, banning a potential employer from Googling your name. In fact, I'm assuming that's the first thing that a lot of employers do when they're looking into someone's background. So it seems a bit counterproductive to have all of these resources and time and lobbying invested into this and having formerly incarcerated people come and speak and talk about how they've turned their lives around and they've paid their public due to society and this shouldn't follow them. Yet, if someone just performed a simple Google search of their name, everything that this law worked for is just undercut because the same perception is still there.
Talking to Tunde Ahmad, a Columbia Journalism Review Delacorte Fellow. He wrote a piece for the review called Why Journalists Need to Think Twice About Reporting on Arrests. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. Do you think the media over-reports on crime? And do they put it too front and center on the newspaper, if you look at a physical newspaper, on the website, on the newscast? Do you find it useful to hear reports of crime and arrests in your community? Would you like to see it done differently? Have you or someone you know been affected by a crime report that maybe you didn't end up being charged with, but that initial newspaper article, it's still out there for maybe an employer to Google? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Tunde Ahmad, a Columbia Journalism Review Fellow. We're talking about how journalists report on arrests and how it can impact the lives of those involved and contribute to perceptions that there's more crime than there really is. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think there's too much reporting on crime in your go-to media sources? Is it overstated, over-dramatized, or do you think it's appropriate what you see out there? Are there changes you'd like to see? Should we see the names of people when they're initially charged in the media before they are convicted? Call 800-642-1234. And if somebody is cleared of a crime, should those old news articles be removed from archives? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Today we heard from Andy in Madison, who says, "Overcovering crime in our neighborhoods turns my wife into a helicopter parent. She gets nervous about things she shouldn't be nervous about." Do you think there's something to that, that if we're seeing lots of crime coverage, maybe disproportionate amounts, it affects our daily lives?
I definitely think this is the case. I mean, the statistics show that for the past 40 years, crime has actually been on a steady decline. However, perceptions are that crime is on the rise. And I think, I mean, people are receiving so much information from so many places, but when it comes to crime, majority of that is coming from news media and news media outlets. And I think that those two things are directly correlated. For so long, these outlets have been operating on the principle of if it bleeds, it leads. Instead of, you know, reporting on a larger array of daily news that still occurs. And I think for crime, of course, it's often the breaking news, because those are the things that historically have attracted people's attentions. But a lot of times, I think stories are just over covering these things in a manner that they don't have to be.
And something I've noticed long term is, okay, if you've got a new crime to cover every day, that can be in the paper. And if you don't have a new crime, you can have charges filed in the old crime, exonerations or arrests made in the old crime, conviction in the old crime. So it can inflate to fill up whatever news space you have.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that there are just so many other things to cover. I mean, there's so many things going on with education, with politics, with sports and local sports. And I think we can expand to fill up more of the space with that. I'm not saying everything we report has to be positive, but I think things should be a reflection of society. And so crime is a portion, and I think we shouldn't do away with crime reporting altogether. But I think there are so many other topics that are worthy of our attention, that are worthy of informing the public on, but we just don't see that. And this revolving door of the news cycle just consistently goes into crime. I'd say, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. Go for it.
I was going to say, I mean, just to like put things into perspective, we gave the example of Darnell and Darcell Trotter and how they were falsely convicted of something, exonerated, but these articles still exist today. But like, this is literally something that could happen to anyone. I'm saying today, if you're on your way home from work, and let's just say you're waiting on the bus or something, and someone comes up to you and tries to rob you, and you defend yourself. However, police come at the moment that you're defending yourself. You may get charged with assault because they don't know how the incident started. But let's say, lucky for you, there was a camera running that was surveillance footage. So the police go back to that. They see what happened. They drop all charges a week or so later after everything is processed. However, the local news media who hears about this brawl and maybe someone got it on camera or something, and there's a video to go along with it, and now you have this article about you being charged with assault. But in reality, that article doesn't reflect what actually went down in that situation. And while in a legal court, you are cleared of this, you're exonerated of this, there's also what a lot of people refer to as the court of media or the court of news cycle of social media, because your perception is still has value outside of a court of law. You know, if anyone Googles you for employment, if you're even, you know, in the scene of dating or something and someone just, you know, you meet someone and they Google you and that's what they find out, it can lead them down a false road or something that isn't really a reflection of events that occurred or the type of person that you are.
Talking to Akintunde Ahmad with the Columbia Journalism Review about a piece he wrote on crime reporting, over-reporting maybe of crimes, and the impact it can have of reporting on every stage of the crime, including maybe an initial arrest of someone who's eventually exonerated, the impact that can have on people's lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tunde, you wrote this at a thing that a lot of journalists read. What kind of response have you gotten from maybe reporters and others in the news business?
So I'm a recent journalism school grad myself. I actually graduated in the spring of this year from Columbia Journalism School. And so a lot of my fellow classmates have accepted entry-level roles a lot of times in metro reporting, in breaking news reporting. And I've received text messages by the tens, by the 20s of them who have read this and have said, like, I've only been on this job now for 3 or 4 months, but I'm so happy you wrote this piece, and I'm sending it to my editors because they're consistently sending me out to report on these crimes. And every time I get a name, a charge, a very brief, vague description of what happened, because nobody there was actually, because no one who was actually witnessed it was there to tell me what happened. I'm just getting the police report account. And they're like, I do this over and over, and A, I don't feel like it adds any value to my job and my development as a journalist, but B, more often than not, it doesn't actually add any value to the public being educated about what's going on, because it's petty crime here, you know, a petty theft thing, or you said a drunken nightclub fight somewhere, or just something very minuscule. And I will reiterate, I think that if something does pose a significant threat to society, by all means, there should be a piece written about it, especially if someone is still at large and they're searching for them. I am for publishing people's names if there's significant evidence to link someone to this and it can be solved and or at least helped out the public with being more safe, then by all means we should do that. But oftentimes it's not, and my classmates have really overwhelmingly reached out after reading this, and I didn't even expect that many people to have this viewpoint, because I had never worked on breaking news myself. But all of the reporters that I interviewed and just their feedback has been like, this is really a problem that we're trying to find a way to address it. And I think some newsrooms right now are working on this. There isn't any widespread, law or widespread practice amongst newsrooms to practice the right to be forgotten. But some newsrooms are proposing this and implementing that, a system where people can go on their website, fill out a form, talk about the date and the title of the piece that they were mentioned in, and provide some sort of reasoning, whether it be documentation or just a personal reason why this is A, no longer of value to the public, B, how it's harmed them, and the reason why it should be taken down. And
I want to bring in a caller to maybe before we run out of time. Al is with us near Dodgeville. Al, hi.
Hi. I just had a couple of comments. I know that I don't watch a lot of TV news coverage, but I know when I do, typically they spend the last couple of minutes, maybe 5 minutes, profiling someone or something positive that happened in the world today, either local or national. And I think to myself, I'd like to watch 30 minutes of that type of news coverage as opposed to the 25 minutes of negative news coverage preceding the 5 minutes of something positive. I don't think there's much value at all in seeing some of the coverage of crime in the media on television.
And since we're a little short on time, Al, I'll stop you at that one point. Tunde, you said it doesn't have to all be positive, but do you agree with Al that the crime coverage has maybe taken some of the real estate away from maybe other kinds of stuff?
Oh, 100%, 100%. I advocate for a newsroom that is balanced. And I think there is so much positive news that gets overlooked and not covered because folks are so focused on reporting on crime that I think it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. People have reported on crime for so long, so that's what people are used to seeing. And subsequently, newsrooms think that that's what people want to see, but they haven't tried out a news cycle where they report on more positive things going on in the community, upcoming elections and local elections. Like, there are such a wide array of things. And I think when crime is important and poses a public safety issue, then definitely report on it. But more often than not, this is not something that is going to be in your daily news, always apparent news cycle. And however, we said it's been declining for the past 40 years, but the perception is that it's been increasing, and that's directly linked to how often we focus on crimes. And it really does not have to be that way. There's so many more things out there that need to be reported that are just as important, in my opinion, more important than this, but it's still that way. So I hope that some editors, some chief editors can hear this and maybe implement some changes into their newsrooms.
Al, thanks for the call. Tunde, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. And thank you, Al, for the call as well.
That's Akintunde Ahmad with the Columbia Journalism Review. He wrote a piece, Why Journalists Need to Think Twice About Reporting on Arrests. Up Monday on Central Time, scientists keep finding more planets outside of our solar system. Some of them are really weird by Earthling standards. We'll explore the wild world of extrasolar planets. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.